Thank you for tuning in for Tune Up with Deb, heard across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association. Now back to your host, Deb Ross.
We are talking about wills. It is Make a Will Week this week. My guest today is Trevor Slaney. Trevor is a lawyer with Hoag Slaney, and he specializes in wills and estates. Just before the break, we were talking about having our intentions clearly expressed, and you told us that that was your job, Trevor, your job to make sure that our intentions are clearly expressed. So I'd like to ask, what questions should we be asking ourselves in preparation for creating a will? So in preparation for that appointment with you, what questions should we be asking ourselves?
I tell people to try to get a general idea of what you have and what you own. Whose name is that account in? Do you have a beneficiary designated? Roughly, what is it worth? If you're worth $1 million or worth $100,000 or anything in between, have some idea when you come in, because planning options are different based on what you have and what you own. You should also think about who would you want to handle things if you were alive and incapacitated or after you pass away? Who do you want to do the work? So have a good idea of who you want to name and basically what you have, and that's it. You don't need to have account numbers. You don't need to have exact balances. You don't need to have all the exact details. That's all for me to cover in that meeting, but just have some general idea of those things that we just talked about.
Now, who makes sure that my wishes are carried out the way that I have you express them for me?
Well, hopefully you've named an executor in your will that you trust that to do this work for you when you pass away. Hopefully you've named an attorney and a power of attorney to take care of you while you're living and to deal with your finances and your property if it needs to be dealt with. And hopefully you've named a representative to help you with your health and personal care decisions if, again, you're alive but incapable. And then, again, hopefully, those people who are doing those really, really important jobs for you are going to rely on the help and the guidance of your team, your planning lawyer, your financial advisor, your accountant, and they're going to get the help that they need in order to make sure they do that job properly.
What qualities, then, should we be looking for? That executor position seems like a very big job.
Huge job.
What should we be looking for?
Well, I've been doing this a long time, and I've had a lot of different executors in my office, and I've come up with a bit of a list of what I think is a good executor. And you don't need to fill all of these qualities to be a good, solid executor, but the best executor ever, I think they should be in a stable marriage and not be making decisions based on what their spouse wants them to do, but making their own decisions. Have no major money problems. Somebody with money problems or money concerns, especially if they're also a beneficiary, they're going to be pressured and feel pressure to cut corners to get money faster. So you don't want that. You want somebody who's available. If you have two equal ranking executors and one lives in Montreal and one lives in Prince George, there's your tiebreaker. You pick the person in Prince George, somebody who lives close by, not afraid of hard work. An executor's appointment is a big job and a lot of work, and they have to be willing to roll up their sleeves and do it. The lawyer does their list of things to do, but the executor has a lot of work as well. Somebody who appreciates the help of a professional. The worst executor is a know-it-all. I can do this by myself. I don't need help. I can fill out a tax return. I can buy a how-to kit and do the probate myself. That executor is very dangerous. That executor is going to risk everybody's inheritance. Now, if he or she is the only beneficiary, go ahead. And you're taking risks with your own money and nobody else's. But a know-it-all executor is a very difficult executor. Somebody with honesty, somebody with integrity, patience. In an estate, you can do everything that you can possibly do, and you still can't complete the job because you're waiting on somebody else. You're always waiting on somebody else when you're dealing with an estate. So have patience and have somebody who's respected by the beneficiaries, somebody that isn't somebody, you know, you could do the best job that you could possibly do, and yet if your little sister is not going to trust you no matter what you do, it's really going to be difficult for that person to do the job. So make sure the person has the respect of the people that ultimately they are working for, which is the beneficiaries of the estate.
I think that is a fantastic comment that you make, that to make sure that the person you pick is respected.
Yeah.
What questions then should we ask a potential executor? Like, so let's say we're preparing to come in and see you, we're preparing our will, we're thinking about what you mentioned in terms of qualities to look for in an executor. We kind of would think about doing a little mini interview with a potential executor. What kind of questions should we ask that person?
Make sure the person is willing to do the job. Okay, so make sure you tell the person that, okay, I'm asking you to do this very, very important job for me. Cover all the things that I just talked about. Okay, all those things, those good qualities of an executor. But ask them, are they willing to do the job? And make sure that you tell them and you give them the comfort of knowing that not only am I asking you to do this important job, but I'm going to make sure that you have the appropriate tools to do it. So I'm going to have my planning done by a professional and updated regularly. And most importantly, I am going to let you know where to look for all of my stuff. If you put $10,000 in a safe and put it under the floorboards of your house and your executor doesn't know it's there, the person who buys the house from your estate is going to get a nice surprise one day because they don't know where to look. You've got to organize your information, and a good planning lawyer is hopefully going to give you the tools to do that on your own so the executor will know where to look for everything that they need to look for. You've been through that with the dealing with your sister's issues.
Been.
Yeah.
So if I was approached by a family member and asked if I would please be an executor for their estate, is it reasonable for me to ask for maybe a little bit of a sneak peek into what I would be getting into? Like just kind of following up to what you said about knowing where everything is that reasonable for me to ask that?
I certainly think it is. I mean, I'm in that world. I know how difficult it is to deal with an estate when you don't know where to look for everything. I know how difficult it is to deal with an estate when you're dealing with a 25-year-old will done by a generalist who... And times have changed, and that will should have been changed 5 times in your life, and it wasn't, and you have to deal with it. I realize the extra work involved with not having a will. So if you're just telling a family member, hey, I don't want to do a will, but can you do all the work for me? No, you don't want to do it that way. So I think it's quite reasonable to ask, A, have you done your planning with a specialist, and have you updated it regularly? And B, what do you have? You know, do you have real estate in China? Maybe I don't want to say yes to that job. I know it's going to be much more difficult than just dealing with the house and the cabin here in Prince George. You know, do you have complicated assets, business interests? Maybe you should be naming me or somebody with a little more expertise than me, or naming a professional or something like that. So yeah, ask, absolutely ask. And some people are very private and they don't want to give you that information, and that's okay, but they're asking you to do an enormous job. Promise them that you'll be confidential with what they tell you. And if they don't want to tell you things and you're okay to not know things, at least tell them. Put it somewhere where I can find it after you're gone, so that you know where to look.
So before we bite off a little more than we can chew here, what are the responsibilities that are expected of an executor or an executrix?
It's a big job. It's a big job. Let me just quickly rattle off a list here. You need to find the will. You need to plan the funeral. You need to keep the assets safe. So you're looking into things like insurance. You may have to change locks. You may have to change the mail. You're probably going to want to retain professionals to help you at a reasonably early stage. And we're not talking about just the lawyer, but also an accountant to do the taxes. Maybe a real estate agent to help you eventually sell the house. You're going to have to come up with an inventory of the assets and debts of the estate. You need to deal with probate, liquidation of all the assets, making sure the taxes are paid. Eventually, of course, you're going to want to account to the beneficiaries and then distribute to them. It's a big job. Even in a well-run, well-planned estate, you're probably looking at a process that involves about 12 to 18 months to get through it all.
So what if the person that I choose as an executor says no? I mean, I'm not going to know about it because I'm gone, but what if they say no?
Exactly. I tell anybody who's named as an executor, they should make an informed choice. So if they find out they're named as an executor after the person dies, that's a red flag right there if you didn't know before. Look into things first. You can't be forced to do the job just because you've taken steps to keep things safe and you've investigated what's there. Get some legal advice early before you dive in and start doing the work. And again, that's important. You can't be forced to be an executor. If the person says no, and there's nobody else named in the will to do the job, then your will is still valid. You just have to have somebody who's interested in your estate step forward and agree to do the work that the executor would have done. This is called an application called Letters of Administration with Will Annexed. So your will is not invalid. It's still valid. Somebody else just has to step in and do the work.
That makes sense. So then is it wise to appoint more than one executor when you're preparing the will in the first place?
I always recommend at least a primary and an alternate executor, sometimes even more. Some people insist on teaming up a team of executors, and some teams of executors work very well together. Just make sure if you want to name joint executors that the executors get along well with each other and work well together. You don't want to put together a team of executors that don't like each other. That's a recipe for disaster right there.
So what are the legal requirements of a will?
You need to be 16 years of age or older to do a will in BC, and that law just changed in 2014, just changed 5 years ago, 2014. You have to be mentally capable of doing a will, of course. It has to be in writing, signed at the end by you in the presence of two witnesses who watch you do it. Then the witnesses also need to sign while you are there watching them sign. And of course, it has to actually be a will. It has to dispose of your assets on your death. It's actually not very hard to make a valid legal will. Now, whether that will is a good will or it does a good job for you is another question altogether. But the requirements to make a valid legal will are actually not too hard to meet.
Life changes really quickly, particularly when we're living our lives online. Life is really moving at a warp speed. What type of life events or life changes necessitate the formal changes to a will?
I specifically advise clients of this every time we're done with a planning file. And I give them a list of things to watch out for. Moving to another jurisdiction is one. Wills and planning is covered by provincial law. My license to practice law is up on the wall in my office. It covers British Columbia. If you move to Alberta or any other province or country, then another law will apply to you. And I'm not talking about visiting. I'm talking about the place that you call your home. And so if that were to happen, you should definitely let me know, take your documents and find another lawyer to help you with this and make sure you're still protected because it's all provincial law. Change in marital circumstances. That's a big one, of course. Maybe you've named somebody to do a job for you in your previous will, and that person has either passed away, become incapacitated, or maybe your relationship with them has just changed in a way. Well, that person is appointed to do a big job. It's time to go sit down and think, do I need to make any changes here? Another common one is you've either won the lottery or you've got a lot less money than you had when you first came to see me, because planning options change based on your circumstances. And somebody with a lot of assets has different planning options available that I will have told them about, as opposed to somebody who has a lot less assets. So your planning options can change depending on what you have. So big wild swings in your financial lives, it can also be a trigger to, hey, go talk to your lawyer.
In our last few seconds here, can you talk to us about how often we should be reviewing our wills?
I tell people every 3 to 5 years. The law changes a lot. And the reason I'm so busy is because the law has changed so much in the last 5 years. You won't have heard about it unless you actually go and see your lawyer and say, hey, this is what's going on in my life. What's going on in the law? Sometimes there's things that are changing in the financial industry that I can tell you about, but I can't contact all of my clients and let them know when things change. So it's up to the client to come in. And I tell them every 3 to 5 years, even if nothing major has changed in their life.
Trevor, would you please provide our listeners with your contact information?
Oh, my firm is called Hoag Slaney Lawyers, and we are at 1533 8th Avenue, just across from the White Spot down on 8th Avenue, right off the sidewalk. My number is 250-561-0008.
Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
To my listeners, thank you very much for your time. And we'll chat again.
A half-hour financial advice program, Tune Up with Deb, is produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George. Deb Ross is an accredited financial counselor with Intune Financial Solutions in Prince George. Be listening for Tune Up with Deb each week at this time. For previous shows or more information on Intune Financial Solutions, visit intunefinancial.ca.